You're listening to the Young Opportunist Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast. My name is Reese Chin, and as always, I'm accompanied by my best mate, Ben Gregg. As you may have seen on our Instagram, we had a few audio mess-ups, so we decided to record this little introduction to the episode after our interview with Charles. Now, looking back on the whole experience, we were honestly just so thankful that Charles even came onto the show, let alone invite us up to his stunning resort. We were just honored that we could even meet with him and talk with him in person and just really have a good conversation. Before we get underway with this episode, I just want to give you listeners some key achievements that he has accomplished throughout his career. So in 1972, Charles became the owner of Combined Real Estate, located in Sydney and throughout New South Wales. He built this firm up to 56 offices. Only 10 years later, Charles purchased the Australasian arm of Century 21 and merged the two companies, making Charles the owner and chairman of Century 21, Australasia, to this date. In 2011, Charles then acquired the property assets of one of Australia's largest property management groups, Wentworth Services, which consisted of 8,000 various types of property. These included commercial, residential... What's the other one? He then integrated these under the umbrella of Century 21, making it one of Australia's largest property groups. Charles also founded an IT company early on in his career, which hosted PC-based software for all his franchisees, making mundane tasks more efficient. This product was later moved on to a web-based platform, allowing access in real time for all employees. To this day, the software Charles created is still utilized by many international members of Century 21 in various locations. Recently, only in 2018, Charles also partnered with Better Homes and Gardens to launch the brand Better Homes and Gardens Real Estate in Australia and New Zealand. To add to this long list of achievements, he is also the author of two real estate books, Profit Driven Real Estate and Listing Rich. Let's get into the episode.
Firstly, I sort of want to get back to the start of your career.
Yeah, it was actually at the end of 72. I came out of boarding school in Goulburn, St. Pat's College in Goulburn. I went to school with some good old mates, Peter Chin's one. Yeah. I think you know him, don't you?
Yeah, I think he's my dad.
He's your dad. I went down into the big smoke because I grew up in Crookwell.
Yeah.
And so you either sheep shearing, potato picking, public service, that sort of thing, if you stay there in that town. And I went down to the city hoping to get my HSC results and to become an architect. So it's something I thought about doing. I wasn't as studious as I'd like to have been, but nonetheless, my sister was in real estate. She was in property management, and she said, look, come and help us clean some flats. Don't just sit around while you're waiting. And so I did, and then about a week later, she said, look, one of the property managers is going on holiday. Put a shirt and tie on and come to work in the office. And sort of went from there. And I hadn't thought about real estate. I had thought about being an architect, which is around the home. And so I still tried to get out of it. I thought that maybe it wasn't for me. And I applied for a job in a records section. And I'm a muso. I play guitar and piano. So for me, that was my passion. I might give this a run while I'm hanging around. And I ended up walking down this long corridor in Castlereagh Street in Sydney, got to an elevator, got up and walked down another long corridor, and all I could see were pictures of racehorses. And I got to the reception desk, and there was an elderly lady with the old plug-in system of phones, switchboard. And I thought, and she looked at me, she goes, you look lost. I said, yeah. I said, I was looking for a record section. I'm on the wrong floor. Me thinking music. She said, yeah, there's a job here. It's keeping records of racehorses.
Oh, no way.
I walked into the largest thoroughbred stock and station agents in the Southern Hemisphere, William Inglis and Son. When I was trying to walk away from real estate, I walked straight back into it. and so I worked there for a short period of time, watched how they conduct themselves. They're an incredible organisation. And I saw a job being offered in a free sales training out at Penrith, because in those days you couldn't get a job as an agent when you're 17 or 18 selling real estate. It wasn't accepted. But this one, I went and jumped in the car and I went to this free sales training at Emu Plains, it was. And I learned a little bit there, went back the next night, and I said to the guys who owned it, I said, hey, you know, I'd really like a job selling real estate. And they sent me out into the streets like they did most of the participants to knock on doors the next day to see how good we were. And they offered me a job. And wow. So that's how I started in sales in Emu Plains back in 1973 or something. Sorry, I would have been 17 or 18 years of age.
That's what I find crazy. Like, especially I have a couple of mates going into real estate, and especially back in your day, that whole stereotype of, you know, the young guys, they don't know anything, and, you know, that you got the opportunity to do that at such a young age. Mm. But, like, being able to make sales, because you made your first sale when you were 18.
Yeah.
And, like, and you
and
didn't...
I still remember the house. It was a three-bedroom brick home in Emu Plains, and it was fully furnished with a Hillman Hunter in the driveway because the people were moving back to England. And I sold that house for $18,750. Oh, $18,750, yeah. So, you know, you think back and you look at it, it's really quite crazy, the whole thing. But, you know, I bought my first home when I was 18 as well. I put away $50 a week, and I bought a what you would call, it was on a main road in Punchbowl, Ball Places, because my parents were living in Lakemba at the time, and they'd moved from Crookwell, and it was on a main road opposite the railway line, all the worst things you could think of, but it's what we real estate agents call close to all amenities, you see.
Yeah.
And I bought that property, did some painting around it, and a year later the market took off, and I was able to sell it for almost probably 70% of what I paid for it.
Jeez.
And that gave me the equity to start looking at other things.
Yeah, that's crazy that you were able to do that at such a young age.
Well, you know, it's about, I know my generation, your generation, when you're kids, you think about travelling all around the world.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. Nothing's changed. You know, what you're thinking about doing, I was thinking about doing as well. But at some point in time, if you just stop for a moment and think, put the effort in now while you can.
Yeah.
While you're young, while you're energetic, while you don't think about bad health or anything that could come your way, do it now. And then it's amazing that springboard that you give yourself when all of your friends are travelling around the world and they come back and you've got a business.
Yeah.
And although business ties you down and can keep you down, at some point in time, if you do it right, you can walk away if you want with a little bit of extra and do what your friends were doing.
Yeah.
And you can do it in business class, you know.
Yeah. And that's true. Like putting your...
five-star hotel backpacking.
Might I add. So, yeah, we've talked a little bit about practical skills, but I really want to dive into your extraordinary mindset. So you made your first sale, and after 3 years you acquired enough equity to buy into your first
office.
Yeah. Your first office. Mm-hmm. How did you continually break through ceiling after ceiling where so many people would usually stop after getting their first job?
I keep trying to think about that. I bought the office in October 1977, so I would have been 21 and a half, 22, something like that. And the person who owned the office I worked for, and they had two offices, and they said they were going to sell it. I'd come back from a sales competition I'd won. I was on a Fiji trip.
Oh,
and he said, oh, we're selling. I said, why? You know, well, I've got a partnership issue and blah. And he looked at me and he said, oh, if you can put X dollars on my desk this afternoon, it's yours, jokingly. And I did. Now, I had no idea what I was doing. And this is a really important point. Anything is possible when you don't know what you're doing. So if you know too much, you talk yourself out of things, or if you go and see experts, or you go and see people who care about you, family and friends, they'll often talk you out of it because they don't want to feel the blame if you make a
responsibility
mistake. And it's true, a lot of people that you think are giving you the right advice, they're giving you advice that is often the wrong advice because it prohibits you, and sometimes it's biased. Not because they don't care, it's because they do care. And so I bought the business, and my parents didn't tell until after. They were a bit disgusted. Because, you know, they Maronite Catholics from the hills in Lebanon came to Australia, no education, sent me to boarding school in hope that I'd become a doctor or a lawyer or an accountant or something of that nature. So it was a bit strange at first, but I think what it was I really didn't know what I was doing. And that's the difference. And I was doomed to fail by everybody else in town because all the real estate agents in town would have been twice my age. And so they sort of looked at it as being a bit odd. But there's something about youth, there's something about energy that overpowers often knowledge.
Yeah,
that's interesting. And a lot of people miss that.
And just like having no doubt in yourself that, you know, the doubt of failure and making mistakes. And
I told, I was scared of failing like everybody. Told anybody that came to see me about their property, if I had a chance to be in somebody's property, they'd look at me, and I was a pimple-faced kid, longer hair, you could well imagine. And I'd say, look, I don't know everything, but I know people that do.
Yeah.
And I'll work really hard for you, and I need to make the sale. I need to get your property for sale.
Yeah.
And that often would push people they are encouraging me.
Yep.
And I did. I knew people I could call and say, hey, what's this, what's that? And I think that overcomes the person who walks in as an expert
with
the
expectation
that they're going to get the business straight away.
Yeah, that's what we hear a lot. Like, don't try and be Mr. Know-it-all and say, be front up, like, be honest and just say, I don't know, like jack shit.
Look,
sometimes
I'm only a short guy, you will have noticed that.
Same as us.
No, you guys are taller than me. You've obviously eaten more KFC than Macca's.
Don't call us out.
I'm not a big meat eater, so. But the thing that really, it was a problem for me when I was a kid, I thought about it a lot, but then a very short period of time later, I'd start meeting people, and they'd come into my office, and they might have seen a photo on one of my newsletters or something, and they'd walk in, they'd look at me, and they'd go like this, they'd look up and down, and straight away I knew they were looking at how short I was, and it became very powerful for me, because their guard, everything dropped, because they weren't threatened or anything by me, and I started using that to my advantage. And so when you're my height, you're looking up to people a lot, not looking down. And that, to me, was very, very powerful. So young age, all of those things, it still became very powerful for me, my energy, my youth, my ability to get out and work and get the job done, but also my stature.
Yeah.
That all helped.
Gee, that's awesome. So many people, I think, like, the stigma around it, because, like, we're not very tall either, but... And often, especially when you're younger, I think you put a lot of pressure on yourself.
Yeah.
And, you just use that to your advantage.
I'm sure that. I've got a good knee punch because mostly that's all I can reach, you know. So.
Something, that you were really passionate about is, like, not only the idea of networking, you touched on it before, but relationship building, like taking that a step further from networking and building relationships with your clients.
That is a very powerful part of any process in business, any part of it. And again, some of these are chapter headings in my book, the one I gave you before, Anything is Possible When You Don't Know What You're Doing, is a chapter heading in my book. This is one that I've pushed out to people in my organisation for a long time. If I build a relationship, the conditions become negotiable.
Yeah.
And that is key. A lot of people go in and have this expectation they're going to get the business. My whole process is about building relationships with people. You know, I don't need to do this with you, and I don't need any more promotion than my business already gets, but it's about that process we talked about, that which you share will multiply, that which you withhold will diminish. Now, I build a relationship with you guys over email and over phone calls, and here we are today. When you go out there and you start talking about real estate, and inevitably you will mention my company. You know,
big time.
I'm not going to ask you to, but you will. And this is what happens. And so if you build your relationships with people and you respect those relationships, I've got relationships with people at the upper echelon of business across the country, and I never ring them up for a favour. Mm. You don't ask friends for a discount.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But I know they're there, they know I'm here, and occasionally we help each other in various ways. If I build a relationship, the conditions become negotiable. So if you want to network with people, you've got to make sure that you start off that way. One of the ways that I built my network was really powerful, and I encourage people to do it, and it's in my second book for salespeople, is that right from the word go, in my mid-20s, I was doing talks at Lions clubs, at Rotary clubs. Anybody that would let me talk as a guest speaker, turn up and talk. And it's nerve-wracking initially.
Yeah.
Not so much today, but it was nerve-wracking. And I would take people's business cards, I would promise to send them something, and I would follow through.
Wow.
And that part of the process is really the key. Most people will go and do something, and then they don't go to the next stage. The next stage is following through, taking information. You go to an open for inspection with real estate agents, most of them ask you for your name, and quite often you never hear back from them. There's that promise, I took your name and I took your phone number. Well, I'm not expecting a phone call. There's the promise.
Yeah.
You've just broken the promise. So networking is about how you start it. We call it the four C's in real estate, in my company anyway. Yep. It's something that we develop. And the first C is you create activity in your area. You let people know you're around. The second is you capture people's details. The third is you cleanse the details so that you can market to those people, which then helps you convert that to a transaction. So from my point of view, if you follow those processes, it's really simple.
And there's a lot of different factors in it. That's good.
Something we talked about on the way up was actually how, especially at a young age, we're sort of oblivious to the power of networking, because we're in a generation where it's like instant gratification, or like you expect instant return, whereas networking is one of those things where you network now and you may not see results until months or years, or you may not never see results.
That is the problem of youth. Whether it was me at my age, when I was at your age, or people at your age, is that feeling you need to get something straight away.
Yeah.
And that is really short term, and it doesn't build foundations, unfortunately. Yeah. But, you know, all the guys in my generation, you know, we want to be millionaires by the time we're 30, outright.
Yeah.
I don't know what your generation says. Do you want to be multi-millionaires? I don't know.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, somebody said to me the other day, I had a nice suit, and I said, you look $1 million. I said, you don't say that to me. I don't want to go backwards. So I don't know what it was for you, but when I was a kid, I wanted to be a millionaire by the time I was 30.
Yeah. I think,
And then something changed. And if you want, I'll talk to you about what changed and why it was really important for me to go through that change.
Could you go through it? Could you go into it?
Now? Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know who it was that taught this to me, whether I read it or I heard somebody say it, but money is not important. It's necessary.
Mm.
But if you achieve a certain standard of professionalism, money will find you. So focus for me became on my standards, my professionalism.
Mm-hmm.
So I had people working for me. They were older than me, younger than me, lived in better homes than me in my office. I owned business. They lived in better homes, drove better cars, went on holidays for 4 weeks a year. It was incredibly frustrating for me to stay the course. The course was to build my professionalism, my standards.
Mm-hmm.
It was easy to break ranks and go out and start targeting money.
But you're doing it for the wrong reasons.
I was doing it for the wrong reasons. So now today, having acquired those businesses, if somebody comes up and says, what do you know about property management? If they look in my history, they'll find out I purchased a business with 8,000 of them, with 300 staff. I've got an idea, because I was building my standards and my practices along the way. So it's very hard for people to argue with you when you do that.
Mm.
So it's important that you think about it. Money is not important. It's necessary. But if you achieve a certain standard of professionalism, money will find you.
That
was the change.
And that's like, there's a lot of chat about, you know, providing value to the society, and like people with bad relationships with money, like, or the typical money doesn't grow on trees or anything like that. But getting rid of that mentality and saying, like, if you provide value to your society, then money will follow through.
The majority of people that win lottery tickets lose the money very quickly because they didn't learn how to get there. And so they don't understand how to keep it. Mm. Making money is not the hardest part.
It's keeping it.
Keeping it is the hardest part.
Yeah.
Keeping it and building on it is the hardest part.
Wow, that's good. I'm next to it.
Yeah, so we have a couple of mates that have sort of just started their careers as real estate agents. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of listeners that have this sort of idea of it as well. What's the two pieces of advice you would give to these particular people? That could even be a common fault you see a lot of young agents do.
Yeah. It's not a race.
Mm.
If you think about, I want to get that car, I want to get that house, I want to do this, I want to do that. On social media, there's a wonderful way of viewing things. You know, when perception meets reality, reality comes off second best. Okay, you see so many people on social media that look successful, and then all of a sudden they're building on that image of success, and it's not real. And so now they're building an image based on false foundations. So I'd say to a lot of guys, just take your time. It's hard. As I was saying earlier on, you see people making money. It's hard for you to stay that way. But focus on who you are and what you can do. If you think for one moment that people don't now go on social media when they're thinking you're coming around to their house to list their property, if you think they don't check you out, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Because they check you out. And anything you do stupidly on social media, which a lot of the young agents do nowadays, they're going to find you, and it doesn't last long. It's your reputation. That, to me, is a really important point to make to younger people coming into real estate. I also think that if you are going into this business, go into it with a long-term mentality. That's another issue with the agents. They go, 5 years, mate, 5 years' time I'm going to be doing. It's important that you look at it as a long-term proposition, that real estate itself, when you take an average home that's an average price and you sell it to an average couple and they keep it for an average period of time, they make money on it.
Mm.
And that is the joy of this industry.
Yeah.
It's not about rushing and racing. It's just going through that process, and before you know it, you turn around, you're dealing with their children. for buying their first home.
Going through.
And then their grandchildren.
And that goes
back to... Which is where I'm at, that stage. and so that to me is the most powerful thing. I've dealt with about a dozen people in the last 3 weeks, nothing to do with my business, because if they want to buy a property, I tell them not to buy it off me if they want me to help. That if they're going to go to Century 21 or Better Homes and Gardens, I can't help them. Mm. It's not at arm's length. But if it's another agent down the road I don't know and you want me to help you negotiate, I'll do that. And I've done that with over a dozen people in the last few weeks, just helping them out. What do I get out of it? Not much, other than a bit of satisfaction. I made a promise, I'm following through, and that's the relationship built, and that's our foundation. And a lot of younger guys, younger agents, sales ladies, sales agents, are thinking in the short term.
That is good. Like, even you coming out today, as you said before, chatting to two nobody 20-year-olds that have, like, we're only just starting our journey at the moment. And for you to even just, like, invite us, say yes to come on the show and invite us up to your amazing resort, it just shows what kind of person you are.
It's important. And I love your father too. I also have to say to you that another thing that really bothers me is that people set goals, okay? And I don't have a problem with goals. Mm. I do believe goals are restrictive. I always push for short-term objectives, long-term vision. Short-term objectives, long-term vision.
Yeah.
If you achieve things every day, every week, every month, which you can see and you can do, you've got control on, they take you to the next level.
Yeah.
There's a book called The Greatest Salesman in the World by a guy called Og Mandino, O.G. Mandino. And he wrote this book, and in there he says, "I'll build my castle one brick at a time, for I know that small attempts repeated will complete any undertaking."
Mm.
You see? And that to me is huge. Now, I had goals as a kid. I wanted this and I wanted that. And if I'd have achieved my goals, I'd be in trouble today. And I'll explain to you why. I was at Officeworks one day with my son. I'm getting a chair for him for his desk, study desk at home. And as we walked out to his car, I could smell, feel, I'm not talking badly, I was Penrith, I could smell Penrith, the heat of Penrith, the feel of Penrith, because I'd knocked on doors there every day at 10 o'clock for years. And I just looked around and I said to him out of nowhere, I said, "You know," and it wasn't quite out of nowhere because I was looking at one of my diaries a few nights before. I said, "You know, sometimes in life it's wonderful when you don't achieve your goals." He sort of shook his head, looked at me, says, "What do you mean by that?" I said, "Well, I was going through one of my diaries the other day and I found a drawing of a shop in Penrith that I had done. And it was three shop fronts. And I wanted to buy the building and turn this commercial, residential and property management. Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to have the biggest real estate agency in Penrith." He said, "What's your point, Dad?" I said, "Well, if I'd achieved it, I'd probably still be there."
Yeah.
You see, if you have a goal, it can restrict you.
Yeah.
It can actually stop you from looking at your real potential.
And I really like that because it's different from the main avenue of saying goals are good.
Goals are okay. Set short-term objectives and make sure that you have long-term dreams and you try to bring those together, because I can set a goal for a year's time, but who would have thought COVID would hit? See, that's a long way down the track.
You don't have any control over that.
You don't have any control over it. Mm. So short-term objectives, for me, in a good environment and long-term dreams, is something that the younger generation needs to take a look at. Get up in the morning with a plan. Get up in the morning with purpose. Don't go to bed without knowing what you're going to do the moment you wake up the next day.
And that's you've hit the nail on the head. Like, one of our next questions was that you put so much work into your short-term goal, like planning a day in advance, but you've pretty much answered
short-term
all of that.
Short-term objectives. And I wake up with a diary and I get a bit slack nowadays, you know. it's to me, I always tell people, it's the second most important thing you do before you go to bed at night, because then you can go to sleep. If you take everything out of your head and write it down before, and there's no order, you don't go, "I'll prioritise this," or simple. Just start writing, and everything that's powerful or needed comes out of your head really quick. Yeah. And then you get to the list and you start thinking, okay, what else? And I get up in the morning and I go, bang. And I could be in my car at 7 o'clock, and by the time I get to the city at 8:30, I've made 11 phone calls and I've already started. And people are still having their first cup of coffee. So it's short-term objectives is really critical if you want to nudge along. I'm not a big thinker. I know some mates who run and got amazing businesses today, you know, worth hundreds of millions of dollars. It's not my way of thinking. It's their way of thinking, and that's great. So you don't have to be somebody you're not. And that's the other point you've got to really understand as a younger generation. you start getting pushed along to do things for the wrong reasons. You know, if you two boys want to achieve something, achieve it because you want to achieve it, not because somebody told you you couldn't do it. Because you go out and achieve something that somebody told you you couldn't do, and when you do, they don't give shit anyway. Well, they're dead. You can't show them. So, you know, you've got to, and that's a really important point. You've got to do it for you. And don't let anybody set your objectives for you. Don't let anybody challenge you to a point where you're doing things because they told you you couldn't. You've got to be who you want to be.
And I mean,
I'd love to do some other things, but I'm really happy where I am in my place in business. I've helped my children along to get into the real estate market and grow their lives personally. And I've always been around when they've needed me. And I think that's really important for me. That's special.
Because, something that we've sort of experienced when we're sort of trying to do this podcast thing, we want to be here for a long time. It's easy for some of your older mates to sort of judge that and be like, what are you doing?
Of course.
Did you experience that
all the time?
A lot.
Because most people tell you what you shouldn't do as well. There's people that tell you what you can't do. And people that tell you what you shouldn't do. And the people that tell you what you can't do are the ones that are challenging you for the wrong reasons. People that tell you what you shouldn't do are people who don't want you to grow faster than them.
Yeah, and that's what we were talking about. We had got in a conversation about that as well. It's like sometimes, you know, that because you're from the same area and you've gone into a bigger pond or you're growing, like they see that and kind of like look down on you. It's really interesting. Question we want to ask all of our guests on this show is, if you could go back to young Charles starting his career with everything that you know now and all your experiences, what would be some pieces of advice to young Charles?
I think pretty much we've covered that in the sense, and I'd like to reinforce it, and that is to make sure that whatever it is you're doing, you're doing it because that's what you want to do, okay? And that you don't do it for the money.
Yeah.
Do it because it's going to help improve who you are. That was really important. So for me, when I go back, I was focused on achieving things for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
People would tell me, you know, you're an idiot. What are you doing opening a real estate agency? What do you know about this? What do you know about that? And so I started working hard to see if I could beat them or challenge them. And it really doesn't help you. You know, yeah, it moves you along and nudges you along, but sometimes it takes you in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a piece of advice that I'd offer people. The other is, when I talked about before, is seeing bigger than you think. Seeing bigger than you think.
Yeah.
And your environment creates that. You know, I've got a mate who's gone out and he's failed in 3 or 4 businesses. And I won't tell you what they are, but he's got one right now that he has a partner, an actor in America that's bought into it. And he recently bought a home, you know, for $18 million cash. Oh. Right? Now, but he is a big thinker. And his ideas are crazy. And people would go, oh, mate, you know, wake up to yourself. Okay? But that's him. That's what he wants. And that's what he sees. He loves that. He loves the limelight, the whole thing. So he's doing what he wants to do. And it's not real estate. It's not this. It's not that. He just comes up with ideas and he just follows them through. So it's important that you do what you want to do. It's important that you realise that you can do more than you think you can.
Yeah.
That you've got to look beyond the goals that you set, because there's often a bigger picture out there. So if I'd have had that chance to re-educate myself, I would have probably gone down that path and told myself not to have so little faith in, and also not to set objectives that weren't big enough.
Yeah.
I used to sit on the edge of the mountain in the Blue Mountains. I still live in the same house I bought 36 or 37 years ago. And I sit on the edge up there at Elizabeth Lookout, and I look over Sydney and say, one day I want to have 90 offices here. You know, I set limits.
Yeah.
You see, that was a limit. When you look at my business today, that was a limit. So that's what awesome. I probably would have told myself. But, you know, at the same time, I'm happy I'm in a position to do things for people today that progresses everybody's lives.
Yeah. No, that's awesome.
So, so we reached out to our community last night and on Instagram, and we put up a story, and we wanted to get a question from the audience.
Right.
Because it's not too often we get 20-year-olds in front of someone of your caliber. And we got over 25 questions, but we were going to originally pick one, but we've decided to pick two, if that's okay. So, Reece, I'll get you to kick off the
first. This one's from Dean Medved. He said, the Australian housing market is currently running hot. What are the factors influencing this?
A number of factors, and I think it's changing.
Yeah.
I think the market's changing to a plateau, but If you have low interest rates, that's one. If you have government subsidies that kick on for first-time buyers and renovators, here's $25,000, off you go. That's two. If you've got a situation where there's government handouts in terms of JobKeeper, Jobs, JobSeeker and so on, and a lot of people have done pretty well out of COVID, that's three. And then you look at the fact that prior to that, us coming into this market, we had a Royal Commission into banking and it stopped the market. The market actually declined. So at some point in time, the market had to go back up and catch up.
Yeah.
And the environment we're in has caused that. In addition to that, there was a limited number of homes for sale because people didn't want to sell because they couldn't get the price they wanted. So if you go back to the start of the year, there was 40%, just over 40% less number of homes advertised for sale than the year before. Wow. 40% lower.
Gee.
In the last 11 to 12 weeks, stock has come onto the market to the extent there's only 17%. Now, lower than this time last year advertised. So you're getting more stock coming onto the market now, which should start to support the buyers out there. You've got, and that's what that's what caused it. What I'm seeing is slowing it down is the fact that interest rates are increasing and people don't know that. The Reserve Bank hasn't increased rates, but I guarantee you if you dig deep, you find out a couple of the major banks have actually increased their rates internally because they're getting nervous. So now I see it the other way. So that's why it climbed, those reasons. No stock, low interest rates, government subsidies, JobKeeper, Royal Commission to Banking, stopped everything, right? Now, I see it coming out the other side because interest rates are going to climb, stock levels are coming in, banks are getting nervous, and the valuers are going to get gun-shy. Because how do you walk into a property's value and start saying, so I might get sued here? That's what happened, and that's what I think is happening.
Wow, that's good. Yeah, because you're now in, like, economics 101, we talk about...
Yeah,
in the economy, like them stimulating the economy, lowering interest rates.
Are these questions from people you know in your
group?
Well, it's important they recognise that a lot of the data out there is historical. I do an interview with Peter Switzer, who is a very famous economist, and I do that every month. And he and I spoke back in May last year when Commonwealth Bank announced that property prices will drop 32% because of COVID.
Wow.
Right. And then 5 months later in September, they said property prices will rise by 9% in the next year. Now, these are highly trained economists. These are highly trained individuals. Not once did I hear from any of those people about what's happening in the street.
You
can go out there and people say, how do I know when I should be selling a property? I say, when you look into an agent's window and all you can see are sold stickers.
Yeah.
Well, how do I know when I should buy? When you look into an agent's window and for 4 weeks in a row, you see the same house without a sold sticker on. That's the coalface. That's not historical. That's real. And any time you do something in your profession down the track, you need to make sure you have a balanced view. And a balanced view isn't what you see in stats. Stats are often historical.
Yeah, just trends of previous things happening.
That's so we picked the market increasing, and they're telling the market's 32%. So, you know, and I spoke to a lady who worked in one of those banks. She came to me about some building I'm doing here around this property. And I said to her, have you bought something because the market's moving? She said, we waited because of what we heard, 32% drop. Yeah, we waited, and now we can't get in. So who takes responsibility for that? Certainly not the banks.
No. They don't take responsibility. Yeah.
Or their economists.
No. That's interesting.
They become a fortune teller. Have a look at both stats and coalface.
Yeah, because especially the people on the ground know mainly know more than the people doing the theory.
Interesting. That's the difference.
So we got another question from Matt Kingmar. Do you believe real estate can sustain the same growth it's seen for the last 25 years? And I think a little bit of background behind sort of that is, I guess growing up, a lot of our parents has seen like tremendous growth in like real estate, and they're sort of pushing that sort of on us.
Yeah.
And yeah, we just want to sort of know, is it the same? Can we expect the same?
Look, it's like everything. There are cycles in everything that we have, and you've got to watch those cycles. And at this point in time, that cycle is starting to change. And so I think that the growth has to stop at some point because affordability becomes an issue.
Yeah.
The capacity to borrow becomes an issue. They're real. If wages haven't increased and property prices have, they become real.
Mm-hmm.
If interest rates were 10% and they went up to 12, that's 2%. It's 20% roughly in terms of cost. You could handle that. If interest rates are 2% today and they go to 4%, which they could do, that's a 100% increase in your repayments. Yeah. So you tell me what might happen down the track. And so it's important that, you know, it's a cycle, and that cycle could work in favour of people, but they need to be prepared. How do you prepare to buy a property? You make sure you put away some money each week. You know, yeah. You can go out and piss it up against the wall, if you don't mind me saying that, no, or you can put it aside and make sure you have that little bit of track record and saving. And then you start building relationships. You build your relationships with your bank. You go and see a bank or a broker and you say, here I am, and they'll say to you, this is what you need to do within the next 6 months. You keep in touch with them. If you go out buying, you go and buy the agent a coffee. People say, the agent's never call me back. I said, so what do you expect? Well, you go and buy them a coffee every week, build your relationship. Mm. When something comes on the market, they'll think of you first. And so it's a process. And a lot of people don't follow the process. My children own real estate. My son's 30 and my daughter's 36, and they're millionaires out of their real estate ownership. Yeah. Mm. Most people are still struggling at that age to put their deposits together. They follow the process. They put aside some money each week. They follow that process. They had a relationship with an agent, so you know I could always work with them and talk them through it. And I had relationships with finance people, which I would send them to.
Yeah,
and I think that's the key. We started this conversation talking about relationships. So if you go back to that question, the market cycles will change and they'll always be favourable to some and less favourable to others. You just have to be ready when the time is right for you. It will come. It will come.
Yeah, that's good. That's so really good.
Goes through all the questions we sort of prepared for us today.
Awesome.
Yeah, we want to say a big thank you once again for not only coming on the show.
That's good fun. I really enjoyed it. Yeah. Thank you. I missed a few holes of golf because of you out there. And I was playing really well.
Man, what an interview. Honestly, we are so excited to finally release this episode for you guys. It's been a long time in the making. And although the audio wasn't the best quality, the things that Charles puts across and the advice he has for young people trying to level up in business, in self-development, things like that is honestly just next level. And we want to say another huge thank you for him to come on the show. And if you look in the show notes below, we have some links to his books and some other resources that you can learn a little bit more about him and his journey in general. So yeah, we want to say another huge thank you to you guys for listening. If you're not already following our Instagram, I encourage you guys to head over there. We have a lot more information about what we've got going on, and we have some massive interviews coming up, so stay tuned.